Oh yeah, I was sitting in the courtroom. Literally, my mom tried to blind my eyes. I see a photograph of my dad laying on the ground in blood. I peek through. You know how you peek through? I just peek through. I see a picture. He's laying down in blood. My brother's sitting right next to me in the court case. And by the end of that, I'm hearing them say not guilty because it was self-defense. And my heart was broken. I was angry. I could have jumped over the seats.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode. On behalf of Disciple of City, I'm Todd Carlton, and this is the Toddcast. Friends, Disciple of City is a nonprofit charitable organization, and if you've been enjoying this podcast and would like to support us, you can make a donation at discipleofcity.ca and follow the prompts in the website. Don't forget to like and subscribe and follow us along on Instagram at the Toddcast_DAC, and also download the United Hive app to share your testimonies of encounters and opportunities that you're having to share the gospel. My guest today is living in Jacksonville, Florida. He's a Christian hip-hop artist, the founder of Breathe Nation 150. He has his EP called Sentiments of Worship and a full album, Heart of God, and a whole bunch of singles. Please welcome Marcus Young.
Let's go.
Let's go. Hey, man, how are you?
Yeah, how you doing today, Todd?
I'm doing good. It's really nice to meet you, man. Thank you for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like we were just chatting before, man, I just saw some of your music on Instagram and just started following and really like what you're doing. And, man, you know, what we do on this show is just really curiosity of how did people find the Lord and how did Jesus become real? So would really love to talk about your music and what you're doing now. Man, how did Jesus become real to you? What's just get, jumping right into it, dude.
Let's get straight to it. So pretty much the year I was born, the year I was born, pretty much I grew up in church like the same year the church was founded amongst my family members, and that's all I knew. I was growing up and it was almost like in a sense of our accolade to do good things for God. So I was learning about relationship, learning about Christianity, and I knew the brownie points and the golden stars you get for being a Christian, but I didn't have an experience that had me to understand the love of God in like a deeper capacity. So I understood, you know, you give him praise, you give him worship. Okay, you lift your hands when the pastor say raise them, you sit down, you clap, you sing, that's your worship. You know, all the good protocol stuff that helps a kid develop. At 8 years old, my father was shot and killed. So my mom was a police officer in the city of Cleveland, Ohio. That's where I'm born and raised from. And what ends up happening is she's actually on duty while my father is out at a bar, literally with his brothers and friends. He's well known, and pretty much he's shot and killed trying to break up a fight. So next thing you know, my mom comes home. I was having the greatest weekend, by the way. It was a weekend I was actually trying to go stay with him, but all my siblings were there spending the night having a good time. So it was just a one-off where I couldn't be there. Next thing you know, I'm getting news Sunday morning before I'm getting ready for church that he was shot and killed. So I still go. We go and attend service. And like there's this moment where my uncle that's a pastor, he says, you see how Marcus is standing here, even though his father, you know, is murdering stuff, and he's able to give God his presence, like his, you know, being present in service, you know, to stand in a moment like this when this is hard. And in the moment, because I'm used to the pattern of these, like these milestones, these achievements, or these like validations, I'm going home later that night, not being consoled from the pain I'm feeling. So even though it sounds great in the church, that night I go upstairs to my room and I have my cassette player, I have my CD player, and I'm listening to nothing but Fred Hammond, Commission, anything that can help me cry, because I was angry. So I'm listening to songs that normally give me a moment with God. My mom's probably, I don't blame her for not being able to stay with me or ask me the right questions at night, because I think she was coping because they told her not even to go to the call. They literally radioed over that happened, but then they called her before she can go to the call to even see my father dead. So they weren't married. You know, it was just a situation where my mom was a single mom. I would go visit them. What ends up happening that night, I'm listening to songs, and I'm just crying my eyes out. I'm curled up like a baby in fetal position. fetal position, and say, God, my father's gone. I was taught not to ask you why, but they say that you're a father to the fatherless, and I need a father right now. You're going to have to be my dad. I have nobody else. You're going to have to be my father. So even though and the crazy part is I already received salvation. I already have received Jesus. And guess why I did it? I knew that when you receive Jesus, they people celebrate you getting saved. And I knew I was going to get a meal from Olive Garden after that. But then when I went home to my grandmother's house where I stayed at the time with my mother, what ends up happening is my grandmother pulls out the Bible and gives me scriptures. I was like, oh, this wasn't just for a great moment. I see these people going and they were celebrating it. This wasn't for a celebratory moment or just a meal. This is actually deeper than what I thought. But when my father died, everything that was instilled in me from things I couldn't really grasp, I guess, if that's the best way to put it, because there wasn't an intention not to take it serious. It was just the things I was watching. When that happened, I pulled on everything that I learned and I knew to say, hey, I need you in my heart and my life. I felt weak. I said, God, I need you to make me strong. I've always asked for wisdom before that, but in this particular moment, I said, I'm weak, like I'm hurting, I'm tired, my heart's breaking, I need you to make me strong. Next thing you know, not only over the years did I become stronger, but in all aspects of my life, people look at me and I know I could probably look like I could lift a truck or something, or just in an impossible moment, because God is literally giving me strength all around in some crazy aspects. Like, I've done some stuff that people wouldn't believe just from that alone. So I really believe he answered that prayer. And even though I've dealt with things later in life, it's helped me be a vessel for other people, because as I went on, I saw that our relationship, that's really when it encapsulated. When he died and I knew I had to call on God to be my father, everything I experienced after that made me actually a Christian, an actual believer. Because before that, it was nice, it was cute. But when I felt suffering, because I lost people, but those were older relatives, that made sense to me. Like, even though like I was getting numb to a young about losing people and grieving, I was like, that makes sense, because, hey, they're older. It's time for them to go. But for something to leave you prematurely and not to have anybody help you through that, I needed an answer, and nobody physically can do it. People will try to say they could be there. People try to be father figures. But when I understood that God had to ultimately be my father because mom was gone, there was no other love I could understand, even in my place of suffering. Like, the worst thing can happen right now, and that's my automatic go-to. So even if I want to have a moment of a lack of faith or anything, I talk to him literally like he's physically with me. That's my conversation. That's my relationship. And that's what's practically embodied me being a Christian and a believer as a whole.
Wow. Sorry, how old were you when that happened again?
8 years old.
Man, that's so young. So young.
It was close to Christmas. It was close to Christmas too. So like everybody's getting together, you know, family and all that stuff. It was like a couple of weeks before, if not a week before.
And so you said you had brothers and sisters, right, that were over at your dad's house when this happened and stuff. So
yeah, it was right next door. So where they stayed was right next door to the place he got shot.
So how did that, were you close with your brothers and sisters? Like, how did that affect the family dynamic and with your brothers and sisters and stuff like that?
So with my mom, so, you know, you have half siblings. So my mom had a sister. I have a sister with my mom, and with my dad, I have a brother and four sisters. So I literally did not get introduced to them until he asked me. He was like, hey, do you want to meet your siblings? Like, so literally I was one of the main children around, and he was finally just like, hey, do you want to meet your siblings? Cause when I would visit, I wouldn't see him. But one day he just randomly asked me, and they start coming around, and we just built a bond. So everybody loved each other. We had fun. My brother would come over to my house on weekends. We would have a great time. So nothing really was impacted. I think everybody had their own lens of how they viewed it. They had their own lens of how they viewed it, but there was nothing where our dynamic was like changed, because we weren't always around each other every day. My brother came around more though. So me and my brother after that were around each other way more, but there was still nothing where we knew how to emote how we felt. We would have conversations, but there was no tear shed. So we would try to break down what happened, but there was nothing where we were emotional together or kind of having that bonding moment of what we lost. It was just kind of like a regular conversation. So we didn't know how to really articulate how that affected us.
That's a real testament to the reality of Jesus, right? As opposed to just someone who has a deep faith, because in that scenario, a lot of people like end up being so angry with God and walk away from it, right? Because God, you know, people look at it like God took your dad and all this, and they become really angry and then go off and stuff. So, you know, at eight, do you recall, and not that it has to be about this, but any kind of like a tangible feeling, like, did you feel God's presence or like his love within you that helped you through that process?
There's been a good 3 to 5 times I can range where I've literally felt arms wrapped around me. Literally, I was curled up on that floor. That was the very first time I felt that. I was curled up on that floor in fetal position, bawling my eyes out, and my chest felt like it was just empty. But as I was just talking, I didn't pray. There was no format of prayer. It was literally a dialogue. So, you know, when you're sleeping in a house full of family members, I'm just thinking if I even cry out or even sing out, because I had a music blaring in my ears. I'm singing the songs like under my breath, like out loud. So I'm emoting, like I'm like expressing them outwardly, but I'm like sounds like muffled. So I won't wake anybody up. And I'm also talking to God with that same format, like asking him to be where they're whispering. I'm almost like whisper yelling. I don't even know if that's a term, but I was literally whisper yelling, crying out to God. And after a while, as I laid there, I was up most of the night. I just felt this, but from behind me. There's been a couple of times in my life where I've had moments like that, and literally where I just felt arms wrapped around me, this embrace. And I would just hold myself, and I would just, and like, it is crazy. I'd be like, later on, when I started to process being a Christian, I'd just be like, why do you love me? I'm not worth it. I'm not worth it. Why do you love me? And even then, it's crazy. I blame myself for his death. I had nothing to do with it. And that was the first thing where I've said verbiage like that from that encounter. I was like, I did this. I should have been there. Like, why didn't they let me go? I should have been there. It's my fault. Like, I want to go get that guy. I'm an 8-year-old kid. Like, I'm angry. I'm crying angry tears. I'm like, let me go get him. But I know it's not right. But please just let me. Like, maybe if I'm thinking like strategies and tactics like it's a movie. On how you can kind of matrix this up and get the guy. But I'm a kid, you know? But yeah. The only thing that was keeping me, like, about the moral compass of not feeling that was literally feeling God's presence.
Hmm. When you got older, as you got older in your teens, were you still quite grounded? Or did it come to a point? Did the person who did it, did they end up in jail? Or did you ever feel like you said, like as a little kid, you know? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was sitting in the courtroom. Literally, my mom tried to blind my eyes. I see a photograph of my dad laying on the ground in blood. I peeked through. You know how you peek through? I just peeked through. I see a picture. He's laying down in blood. My brother's sitting right next to me in the court case. And by the end of that, I'm hearing them say not guilty because it was self-defense.
No way.
And my heart was broken. I was angry. I could have jumped over the seats. And I felt, it's funny, I felt out of body being in that courtroom. Because when I think back to it, like it was happening, but I didn't feel like I was there. So I'm dressed up. I got my suit on, everything. We're sitting in the row. But every time I think back, it felt like I wasn't there. And the only thing I can't remember, because that was the most pivotal, just her trying to cover my eyes. And I could see. And I could see his body in the pool.
Wow. So... Oh my gosh. So as you got older, then did you find that position of forgiveness, or did you get older and there must have been some kind of struggle with knowing in your heart that because God had touched you and been part of your life that you need to forgive this person, but also that struggle, that real world struggle of like wanting like, you know, revenge or justice or whatever. Was that a process for you?
I can't remember when I recalled to forgive him, because and it's funny because I know I've forgiven him like in a sense at some point, but I think it got drowned out by me trying to cope with my father being gone. Like I think it actually like it wasn't suppressed, because I know some things I've suppressed and that you had to just deal with it, but it didn't feel as heavy, because I think as I healed from my father passing, that kind of got bundled up with release too. And oh, you know what? I'm sorry. Thank you, Holy Ghost. As I'm talking, I do remember. There was a point, I don't know if I was fully in high school yet, but there was a point, and I vaguely remember, where I blatantly said I have to forgive that man, because what would, like literally, I'm not trying to be cliche, like what would Jesus do? Because when I would read the Bible, the context of that saying, I knew I had to let it go. Like, I had to let it go. So that's one thing I can say. There was a point where I actually had a conversation with somebody, and it was like, how can you forgive him? He killed your father. I was like, yeah, it sucks, but Jesus says we have to forgive. You don't make it in because he forgives. So how can I not be like Jesus and forgive? But it came by a conversation, because when people ask me about it, or if I told my story, I can say that, because I knew I had to do it because of the conversation. I was ministering to somebody. They made me realize that I had to do that. And then in turn, I said, well, I had to do it.
Yeah.
Because I was always, the biggest thing for my church, we were taught to go and lead people to Christ. Because like, well, in my childlike mindset, because this is not church today, I know better now. But my church was the only church, because that's all I grew up in. If you came to my church, you got saved. So even with my father, at the funeral, I didn't know that he actually received Jesus. So that opened my eyes. So I kept, my goal was to get him to the church. And I was like, hey, you're saved once you walk in my church doors and my pastor prays for you, you're saved. But then when I found out at the funeral in the obituary that he received Jesus, I was like, oh, you don't have to be there. My daddy's in heaven. That was my only concern. So when the funeral rolled around, I was like, God, please don't let my daddy be in hell. Please don't let my dad be in hell. Because literally, if we go back, my mom has 13 siblings, including her. And then my dad was literally a gang leader. He literally, in Cleveland, in the time he was relevant, there was a peace treaty between the Bloods and the Crips, because he met a man that inspired him to do better. Wow. So it was like a Romeo and Juliet thing. Like, literally, his friends were about to fight my family members, and my grandpa had a shotgun on the porch, and he's trying to flirt with my mom. Like, it's this crazy thing. Like, literally crazy thing. But overall, he loved my mom. He wanted to marry my mom. My mom, you know, just the back and forth, you know, the love story things. I would try to get in between, because she was a professional boxer as well. So if he went to her boxing matches, I'd be like, hey, give mom some flowers. I was trying to set them up, hook them up to get them married. And at the same time, I'm like, hey, come to church with me, dad, to get him saved. So when I saw that in the obituary and I tapped her, I was like, mom, like, dad got saved. Like, oh, he's like, he did. Like, yeah, I was like, he got saved. I could have cried in a funeral, not even because his casket was there. I was like, my daddy's in heaven. Like, he's got to be. Because there was no way I could have known the things he'd done in the streets, because he had a Christ-like heart to people everywhere. I never had a bad experience with him. I never seen him be evil to anybody. He helped everybody. But when I heard stories later on, he was trying to find his way from that life, because he didn't think there was anything more for him, though.
Yeah.
As I realized later on, everything was a secret to me. So everything per that life was a secret, because they did. And one thing I can thank my family members for, they wanted me to stay as pure as I was being raised to be, because they saw what I was becoming. So even for him, it was like, is it just let this boy be? Don't introduce him. Let him be. And I'm grateful for it. But at the same time, there's that tug of war. Was like, I wish I would know what made me who I am, because I'm practically a carbon copy. Like, I'm literally a carbon copy. I'll pull up a picture. I'm a carbon copy of my father, and everything I do is almost like an enhanced version of what I hear about him with people I deal with. So the only way I can even match it to identify myself is with his stories. Crazy part is, we're truly supposed to identify with Christ. So when I think about God and the fruits of the spirits and things, ultimately I see how God's spiritual genetical DNA in Jesus, and I'm using that loosely, so I hope nobody doesn't think I have like this doctrine or anything, but I'm just saying, like, the fact that we have this miraculous conception of Jesus, and you see him being God in the flesh, it literally represents our physical relationships, because you come from your parents, you figure out how you tick, and you look at them and see what makes you you, and they see you when they were young again. And so you got this never-ending cycle of learning who you are and how you're going to enhance or change the molding of who you become. And that's literally God. That's the principle and premise of God. So when I saw that, I was like, I wish I would have had my physical model so I can get over my mistakes, because I hate making mistakes. Like, I'm doing better now, but I wish sometimes I could learn his ticks, his strengths, his weaknesses through my life. But literally, it's been nothing but the grace of God that I can sort through who I should have known I'm coming to be me. But at the same time, God has molded me to be a person that I never thought I'd be either, just because I chose to have a relationship.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. That's so cool. So Cleveland, Ohio. And while I'm asking you this question, right now you're crystal clear, but the screen's been freezing up. So I don't know if that's something on your end or mine, but to check that out while I'm asking you this. But
you got the
that's cool, man. For those listening, it was just a picture of Marcus and his dad there. Marcus, so Raleigh, North Carolina. So I don't know. I might be jumping way far ahead here. But what brought you from Ohio to North Carolina?
Oh, you're fine. So, yeah. So Ohio, born and raised, like just practically was there my whole life. Like I don't think any of my family members moved outside the state except for a few or one or two. And so practically lived there my whole life. I finished high school. I was getting ready to go to college, did college. My mom was being considerate of my school process. So she didn't really want it. She wanted to move out of state at some point, but I think she just wanted me to finish school just in the States before I decided. So like if I went out of state or whatever. So she finally retired. She retired as a detective for the Cleveland Police Department. And she was just like, hey, you know, you can decide where you want to go. She's like, you can decide where you want to go. So I'm going to North Carolina. We were visiting. It was nice, but then it was finally time to make the choice. So she said she's going to North Carolina. I said, well, hey, I'm going to Tucson, Arizona with my uncle. and so because I did not want to leave Cleveland, but I also was letting go of things there that I needed to leave behind. So nothing necessarily where it was like kind of like anything drastic or scandalous. Like I was more so a hopeless romantic. So like a girl that I was in love, hoping it would be like high school sweethearts, friends, you know, things like that. Like, so I finally left. I thought it'd be healthy for me. Went to Tucson, stayed there. I was with my cousin. We were planning to get a place together and I had a job lined up. One day I'm sitting in my room that they had for me and I'm writing and God tells me you need to be in North Carolina. I hear it clear as day. And a dog, there was two beagles that stayed there. And I cried and I said, God, I'll be obedient if that's what you have for me. I literally said out loud, the dog comes upstairs. And I said, the dog's name was Bella. I said, Bella, I have to go. Like, I have to go. Literally, I remember it clear as day. Next thing you know, I'm telling my cousin, hey, God told me I have to go to North Carolina. It's like, well, how do you know God told you that? I was like, I'm really not even going to confuse you trying to explain it to you because I don't know how to tell you how I experienced God. Like, I mean, I can tell you I love God. I was like, but I know without a doubt that that's what I need to do. And so I go ahead. My mom's already there. I don't take the job or nothing. I go back to North Carolina. And pretty much it's the worst time of my life the first year. Like, I'm just an angry, bitter young adult staying there trying to look for work and trying to get back into school. And I just didn't like it. I was at home. I was just watching TV shows, just trying to apply for jobs, different things. Didn't have any friends. I missed everybody from Cleveland. Like, it was just – and so I kind of went into this – I don't want to say rebellious phase because even if I try to be bad, God party poops on my bad behavior. So I never get to have fun being bad. Like, I never get to enjoy being bad. So it's like – it's a little taste, but I never get to fully indulge in, like reckless behavior. So, yeah. So he party poops on my parade.
That's good.
And, so literally – I was having like a spiritual temper tantrum because I'm just like, God, like, I don't like it. Like, but you told me to come that I'm like blatantly complaining about this. But during that time, there was a group of friends I had from Cleveland. And there was a situation where some family members used my love for God and my obedience God to kind of prophesy, hey, you need to let go of these friends. So they used that metric. So I didn't feel like I would get in trouble with God and I trusted their voices in God. And I had to let go of some friends that kind of kept me balanced, even though they were like distant and they were still in Cleveland. Like I had to let them go. I made calls. It was like a bad bromance breakup. And I was crying every call. It was like three calls I had to make. And it was three different responses. But they weren't Christians. But the main one had the heart of Christ. He's literally raised Jehovah Witness. He never necessarily practiced the religion. But he showed more Christ aspects than anybody I ever knew. And we're still like we're now reconnected and friends to this day. But at the time, thinking I was walking in obedience per the people I respected and looked up to, I listened, I cut them off. So like, God, I need you to give me friends that are in North Carolina. So pretty much that transpired. I settled. Now that's where Breathe Nation comes. All my ministry, I was dancing, ministering in churches. So I wasn't even doing music yet. I freestyle, but wasn't doing music, ministering in churches. And then, you know, the rest kind of followed to kind of get us to Jacksonville pretty much. But that's what got me to North Carolina.
So, okay, so you mentioned Breathe Nation. So let's talk about that there, your ministry, Breathe Nation. When did that birth? And just tell us about that, a little bit about that.
Yep, so we had Breathe Nation. So pretty much there was two groups. When I met those friends, there was one group they already had. So because I was always used to being a leader in groups, I got tired of being a leader, or being like, I just didn't want to do it because I got tired of the weight of people changes, losing friends, keeping friends, or like people just didn't always want to live like Christ. Now, I'm not saying I had it perfect, but the way I learned, I was kind of naive to certain things as far as behaviors. So sometimes it would disqualify who I would hang around if I found out they were doing things that I didn't do. And I just didn't, at the time, I was kind of not super religious, but I still had a tendency for what I originally learned before I developed more in Christ to kind of set boundaries. So I was with this group when I met those friends. They already had a group. And I said, hey, I'm actually just going to hang with them. Like, they're cool. I'm just going to hang with them. Moments came out where I started stepping up. We made another group, and it was all based around dance ministry. So by the time that wave ended, I was getting ready to marry my wife. I met a minister. People were trying to actually create minister and training manuals. People were trying to get me to become pastors of several churches. And I was like, hey, I'm too young. I can't write any minister and training manual. I'm still learning. I said, I'm not prepared to pastor any church. I said, I'll support you. I believe in you. So they were trying to suck in my fiance, but not wife at the time, like, you know, using prophecy things to try to incite me or excite me to become a pastor. I was like, hey, I'm not ready. I can't write you anything. I'm not ready. What ends up happening is, as I'm getting married, the person that married us, I ended up joining his church just because of how he counseled a moment at the wedding rehearsal. So upon joining that church, me and my wife sat in a McDonald's parking lot, and I said, babe, I said, I remember talking to a friend, and I got all these talents and gifts. Like, I can do a lot of stuff. And I said, I just feel like there's just something that I should be doing, or at least helping people with. And she says, well, just do it. Like, why don't you actually just do it? You keep talking about it. You know, we're sitting, like, we didn't order the food yet. We're just parked there. I was like, hey, there's so many outlets. I just don't know what to plug into. So after we had this conversation, she pushes me. I pray. And I see Psalms 150:6, let everything that have breath praise the Lord. And in those same crying moments I had when my father died, one thing I remember is I had breath in my body. So my heart felt empty, but even to cry, I understood the power of breathing. And what I mean by that is, I'm not talking about like the therapy aspects, but literally the fact that I had breath in my lungs to even do, because anytime I felt like quitting, it's the fact that I was like breathing, like it, like forms of breathing literally let me know, like, hey, even if you feel weak, you're alive. Like, as long as you're literally breathing, you have the ability to do what I say. You have the ability to go out and do, so you can't quit. So times where I got depressed, where I thought I couldn't live, anything like that, it was the sole fact that as long as I can do this, it's like, how can you quit? Because you're alive. Like, you're not going to tell me. Like, you're not going to tell me you can't do it. So something in me will always go. So when I thought about that, and it takes singing, it takes me breathing. Dancing, it takes me breathing. Rapping, it takes me breathing. Everything I do and execute takes me breathing. I have to breathe. So taking that scripture, embodying that, taking the singer in the shower, out from the shower into a stage, the person that needs to write their book, the person that needs to start the business, breathe is to breathe life into businesses and gifts and travel around the world potentially and hold events where you literally push those people forward. So not the already mainstream people, you have your stage, but to give a stage to the people gifted in Christ.
Yeah. Wow. That's really great. That's really great. You met your wife in North Carolina?
Yes, sir.
I guess. Cool. Cool. So, well, actually, first of all, you talked about dance groups, like just as you got into the Breathe Nation. What does that mean? Like for the listeners? Oh, so. Yeah. What does that look like?
So, yeah, if you think. Oh, there we go. Hold on. I got you. I'll get you another light. So that's like Stump the Yard-esque pop lock dancing. Literally, we would go out and we originally just dancing to music. So it wasn't even about dancing to Christian hip hop at the time. Like, we were just dancing all types of songs and we would minister at churches. But the thing is, though, I told them, so like, yeah, it's pretty much like waving, popping, locking, b-boy, all that stuff. But literally, we were one of the major and first groups to really get known out there for doing it in churches. Now, the guys I met were already doing it, though. So I just joined in with them because I was doing it already, but we weren't together doing it. Right. So that's how we actually got connected, because there was an opportunity to do it. But we were the very few that were actually consistently doing it and doing it genuinely. So not like somebody calling you and being like, hey, we know you dance all over the place. Dance this one time at an event. Like, this was a regular occasion. We were constantly getting booked at churches and other events. So it kind of became a thing. So that form of dance, like if you look at World of Dance, you look at Les Twins, any form of dance or fiction, those type of guys, that's the dance we were doing, but in churches, to gospel songs, literal gospel songs. So if you're thinking about like Todd Delaney, like the anthem, we're dancing to it. Travis Green, Made Away, we're dancing to it. Awesome. Like in the churches, like, and God was moving, like literally, because we were making sure we were dedicating our lives for the Holy Spirit to flow through us to do that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when did the music start? You doing your own stuff, your worship EP? Like, when did you start writing songs and start recording?
So I was writing songs since I was a kid, and I had a bunch of recordings that were never released since like growing up. Now, it was an obedient work to do music. So Breed Nation segued into that artistry portion. And what I mean by that is people told me what I shouldn't and couldn't do, so I never did. So singing, literally, that's all I did. But people would literally have me sing and then tell me I can't sing. So they'll still call me to sing and then say, hey, well, you can't do this. And then with rapping, I picked it up because I'm like, hey, well, if people tell me I can't sing, and that's all I know that you do for Christian or gospel, I'm going to rap. So I don't want anybody to talk about me anymore, tell me something, or call me just to tell me what not to do. So I'm going to rap. And ended up rapping. And this is so crazy. On one side, I'm like, hey, I'll write gospel songs. And on another side, I'll write secular raps because they don't mix. So I actually was never a Christian hip hop fan because how I was raised, that's not of God. And I actually was one of the biggest like advocates. I was like Paul for this cause because of how I was taught. So I was so like backwards that I just didn't combine them. So when I actually came out of that and I saw the power of it, when I started dancing with that group to dance in churches and seeing Christian hip hop and seeing that it wasn't a big deal and how I was judging it, 2018, I officially decided to be obedient to God to publicly release music because I didn't want to deal with industry. So I didn't want nothing to do with industry. I knew how I was. I studied it since I was young because I thought becoming famous takes care of my family. So the word fame was just kind of like wealth to me. So it wasn't like rich or like fame in the sense of like getting everybody to look at you. I was like, hey, you solve our problems of money if you become famous, because that's how these people are rich. That was my kid mindset, and I carried it. When I learned the industry because I would study them hoping for that goal, I didn't want to do music until 2018. God was like, you have to finally release. I was like, well, I don't want to deal with industry. Release. 2019 was my first single release, and it was Escucha Me. So that means listen to me in English, but it's Spanish. So that was a word that followed me most of my childhood. That was the first single, and that was my first statement, like publicly release platforms to actually do Christian hip hop, Christian music.
Hmm. When you say people told you that you can't, did that mean like, you can't, you shouldn't, or they didn't think you could sing?
I think it was both sometimes, but it was kind of like an oxymoron, because in the same breath they would tell me not to, I was being put up to still lead a song or do something. So I don't know, and this is a theory, so I can't quote it, but I would just say sometimes it would feel like because I was the only brave one to use the gift, they wouldn't take me away from using it, but then there was major critiques when I confidently did it. So let's say instead of giving coaching or things to enhance that gift, there was just moments of either like left or right verbiage. So it did discourage me because at the time I was looking for people to, because I don't like making mistakes, and I actually adhered to authority or people that I looked up to. So sometimes if I wouldn't have been too careful, they had the power to either kill or uplift me. At the time, because I didn't understand that, you know, hey, see, God, I'm not saying you go out, like, I wouldn't go out and try to build a house right now. I actually know I'm not skilled in that. But one thing I would proactively do per the gift that God gave me, singing was it, but I do believe everything needs mastery. So, of course, being a kid, you go through puberty and stuff, like, yeah, you could probably say it, but nobody would help cultivate. They just told me what would or should or couldn't be done. And I think it was on both sides, what you're saying. Sometimes I'd be like, hey, I just don't think you sound good. And I think that's preference, because I can hear a song you might like that might not be my favorite, but I respect all sounds. But go to somebody else and be like, that's not my type of music, doesn't mean the song's bad, you know?
Totally.
So I think on that side, it was like opinion or preference. But I think there were some times where people just, I don't know, they just had an opinion and they just spoke it. So I had to battle with that sometimes mentally.
Yeah. Well, here's something. This is from a year ago. I love this intro. I don't know, friend. Sounds like he can sing to me. So this is a year ago. I'll praise you. Talk about this. This is great. It's obviously your wife and kid here. Or two kids. Hey.
Oh, so yeah. So pretty much, yeah. My wife and two kids. My son and my daughter. Yeah, they run a video. And pretty much, yeah, like that song came from a TikTok. Literally, I was on TikTok, and there was a producer, and there was a phase when I was releasing my music and getting more into my artistry where I would duet producers' beats. The girl saw it, and her mother, who was her manager, literally emailed me and messaged me, and they loved it so much she couldn't stop listening. They wanted to finish the song. So literally, just from a TikTok video, literally, we just decided to work together, and that came from that alone.
Wow. Wow, that's so good. The things have changed, eh? Of how music can get out there. Yeah, that's awesome. So you also talked about you're doing some shows, some upcoming shows. What's up and coming?
So yeah, so I normally do a lot of traveling. So my mentor is Uncle Reese. So he's definitely like someone that's got some ground, you know, leverage in the game. So I'm grateful for him. He's a brother of mine. So pretty much if I'm not traveling on the road with him right now, we got two packed weekends. So tomorrow there's a festival going on because I work with youth. So I work with youth at an after-school program. I minister to them because we're faith-based. So it's called the Carpenter Shop Center. And literally I'm a teen program director. So I'm over the teen program. But practically I just help where I get in to fit in for all these kids. I love them. They like another extended family of my own. And there's an event tomorrow called Celebrate Arlington. And it's going on right now. While I'm here, it's probably about like not even 10 minutes away from me right now, happening for the first night. But tomorrow I'm bringing out Breathe Nation. They're literally driving right now to get to me, my crew Breathe Nation, because they're all in North Carolina. And I got some friends I got out here that are artists, and we're coming together to put on a concert for them after the talent show. Our goal is, because it's a marathon, a 5K marathon, our goal is for our portion is to edify the youth that do the talent show. We're going to give them a spiritual concert, a Christian concert, all Christian music, and afterwards offer up salvation. My goal is this year to have no fear, be effective and be efficient, and pretty much get these kids Jesus. They're going to church and learning, but even from my story, like I was learning, but there needs to be depth. And it doesn't mean somebody doesn't want to give them, but there's so much going on in the day. Sometimes the parents are praying so much for themselves, they're not thinking about the in-between to give them kids, their kids Jesus. So sometimes the kids, by consequence, watch their parents' experience, and now that's all they get. They don't get the conversation, they get the experience. So it's like, I want to make sure these kids know that there are safe havens in our area to give them that. So we got that tomorrow. Then it's funny. So I haven't had a birthday gig in a while, but we got two birthday gigs this weekend, pretty much. One for a little girl that pretty much they want a Christian artist. So it was through a brother of mine. His name is T. Greasy Green. He's on a song I have called Dreams. And then Sunday, it's a birthday party for someone that's turning 100, and they pretty much just want a whole blowout of fun.
Wow.
So he's literally turned 100. His son, which is my brother's wife, her father was like, hey, literally, she was like, can you guys make it? At first, she only asked me, but then when she found out the crew was coming, she's like, can you all make it? So we got a packed weekend. And then Saturday, we're actually locking in because I'm currently working on my third project.
100.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's so good. So you're currently working on a new project?
Yeah, so there's actually something that, well, you'll see it on my social medias because I'm still working out some stuff, but I have a plan for for the body of believers with multiple projects, and they're being all worked on at one time. So technically, you can say there's three being worked on right now at the same time.
That's great. That's great. And dreams. Well, I don't know. Sorry, man. I'm just trying to play another track here, because this is your.
I got you.
This is your latest. I'm going to have to wait for it to restart, I think. So that's how about this here?
Oh, yeah.
How do you find the response to stuff like this on Instagram? Like when you just do little pieces of music, how does that respond?
Like as far as like, it's really good. So, you know, so it's really good actually. Like normally when it starts reaching the other audience and different people, like how you even saw it circulating, I'm actually surprised because I actually thought my music was not going to be received because of the way I want to deliver it. So, you know, today's sound, as far as hip hop in general and R&B, it actually has a certain, I'm going to use this word because I feel like it makes sense, like a certain texture to it. Like the way you receive it, you know, like these kids today want certain like auto-tune and reverb and trap type, drill type stuff. But the way I arrange music, how God gives me the sound, I foresee when I'm making a track what it'll be like being live. So because I was built around arrangements of music, you would think that normally I would just try to find the hardest hitting beat. Now I can say with some of these newer songs coming out, I definitely found some, but I still translate them. So what I look for in that, I try to look for how the people will receive it live. So even though they're getting those tracks, they give a great response, but I notice that there's a greater impact once they get to see me as far as with band and those songs being translated with band and converting those. But social media wise, now I get trolls on YouTube, but I think that's YouTube's audience anyway. So it's funny, you got the people that come in and troll, but in the sense of like Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, I've received nothing but love. Honestly, people wanting to stream. I've gotten some testimonies from people too, just from them listening to certain songs later on and what it's done for them.
Yeah. You know what? It seems like no matter what anybody's, I'm looking at, you know, lots of artists, and I'm sure you are too. And it seems like no matter what people are doing for the Lord, somebody's, you know, judging it or has like a problem with it. And the way I look at it is, man, there's so many genres of music, and what's going to draw people to the Lord, what's going to be relatable to people, to how they're living or their musical tastes. And man, we shouldn't be judging. We should be supporting. Right. I mean, unless it's totally blasphemous or whatnot, but otherwise, man, we should be supporting. And because you're reaching, you're going to go and working with the youth, like you're saying, and reach a bunch of kids. Man, have you had, in some of these things that you've done with the youth, have you had some opportunities? Have you had some kids come up and ask you your story, or have you had opportunity to share with some kids at these events and stuff?
Oh, yeah. So events, I probably haven't had it's 50-50, because every now and then with some events, like it's more so the goal of like whatever the theme of the event is. But there's been every now and then when I've had a chance to speak or so, or had that pocket of opportunity to get into that story of my father. Normally, I would honestly say like that introduction to Christ, I normally don't present that on the forefront, because I'm always listening to the Holy Spirit about what's needed in the moment. So I don't make it like a routine thing to introduce that for the testimony. Because, I mean, I know we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. But I try to make sure whatever God needs me to deliver in that moment, I speak to those needs. Because I know they're coming with an expectancy of what they need for God to do for them, even when they don't realize it. So I always pray to have the right now word. God, open the hearts of those that are ready to receive what they need right now. So it can always vary just based on the conditions of the room and how God's flowing, honestly. So sometimes I'm not always set up to tell that story. It's kind of more so in dialogues like this. They get a chance to get to know me.
Yeah. Yeah. I just gonna blast back and have a little bit more of this song in the background. Because it's good. Yeah, Marcus, Man, thank you very much for coming on the show today.
No, thank you for having me, man. You let me talk about a whole lot, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, I appreciate your story. And you know what? You know, everybody's story is great you know, how God writes people's testimonies. But I just find it so good that you had like one of the worst tragedies that could happen to a little 8-year-old kid happen. And just like you didn't go completely off the rails and, you know, like hit rock bottom. And nothing against people that do. We, you know, there's lots of stories and good positives out of it. But, you know, a lot of people hear those crazy stories of people that, you know, just end up right in the gutter. And they're like, man, I wish I had a story like that because whatever, mine isn't so good. And it doesn't have to be that way. Right? Like God was just with you throughout and carried you. Just a testament to how real and how good he is.
Yeah. One thing I will say to that point, I actually thought about when my father died, I said, is this what people are feeling like? I literally said that to myself as an 8-year-old kid. I said, the kids that pick on me, the things that are happening, are they upset because something happened to them? And I said, I never want anybody to feel this pain. That's literally what actually made me not like get angry or like be mad at the world. Cause I said, wait a minute, why? Like this sucks. Like this feeling sucks. So I thought about every kid that might've been angry at class. Cause I used to just let people like step all over me as a kid. Like the first fight I ever had was because my auntie said, either I'm going to whoop you or you're going to beat up that kid. I didn't want the whooping. So I whooped the kid. I whooped the kid cause he was whooping on me. But the thing was, we were friends after, which I was learning that dynamic too. I'm like, hey, we just fought. Where is this respect coming from? So I didn't understand it. Cause one thing I did have around me was just constant love. Like, even though there was things that happened in family, one thing I got in those early days were constant love. So I was like, hey, I'm only feeling anger and sadness in this moment, not because I can't get a toy I want, but because I actually lost a family member. So I said, did anybody else actually deal with this? And I said, I feel like I want to punch somebody. Yeah. So I was like, oh, like I never want anybody. So literally I've overdone loving people to the point that it's been misread because I just solely don't want anybody to hurt. Like I'm not God, but literally people have looked and been like, hey, like you can't protect or save everybody. Like sometimes I've done too much to make sure nobody has to hurt, honestly, because yeah. I just never like that feeling. So if you talk to people that I disciple now, they literally can tell you how overprotective I am. And I have to learn how to step back because I just don't want anybody, including my family, to ever experience pain. So even for my son, I had to tread very lightly not to keep him from everything because he has to grow.
Yeah.
So I have to learn how to daily step back and not be like, hey, I don't ever want you to experience pain. So I still learn to this day to be like, hey, let this process happen. This is what develops you. Like, let this happen. So yeah. that's what inspired that.
Yeah. Well, everyone, Marcus is on Instagram. I am Marcus Young. You can find him on Instagram. There's links there to his music. He's on Facebook as well. Is there a link for Breathe Nation 150 as well? Well, that's through Instagram.
Yep. So that should be in there. So yeah, it should be in my bio on my Instagram as well. Yep. So you can go, if you find me on Instagram, you can go straight through there to get the Breathe Nation.
Yeah. And through that in his bio, you can get connected into Spotify and check out Marcus's music. It's great stuff. A lot of great little clips there on Instagram Reels as well. And Marcus, so once again, man, thank you very much today, bro. I just have one more question for you.
Sure.
When we can relate to an experience somebody's had, we can, you know, have the possibility to know what to say to someone. And so you talked about this happening to your dad at the beginning and you going up and just curling up into a ball in your room. If you were at one of your events or there was an 8, 9, 10-year-old kid who had lost their father too, and either you found out about it or you could see it, having experienced that, what would you say to help that child?
Understand that your current life does not end with your loss. One thing that saved me was knowing that there was something after this. If I didn't understand that there was heaven after that loss, I wouldn't have had hope to believe that I was going to be okay. So honestly, like the concept of heaven helped me even live this way. If I didn't know that heaven was the outcome of any of my suffering and the reward if I chose to live right, I probably wouldn't have went this way. So this is personally for me, but for a child, I would say, hey, this current suffering doesn't mean anything compared to what God actually has for you and what he will do for you. So my actual verbiage is, I dare you to ask him for what you need and to believe. I dare him to make your request known, and it won't work if you don't believe. I tell everybody this when I evangelize. I say, hey, don't try to make a request if you don't believe. It's not going to work. I met people that prayed and they got mad at God for not answering prayers. I was like, you didn't believe. Because once you actually say, God, I'm going to give you a chance to prove yourself to me, he's going to actually show up, because he won't fall. Like, he's not going to let his words fall to the ground. So when you actually believe that there's a chance he's going to do it, when he shows up, you're stuck. You're caught. Because he's going to do it. I'm a walking testimony that he's going to do it every time. If you believe it, though.
Yeah. You got to believe it, and you got to truly seek it. Hey. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Marcus. It was super great to meet you. Bless you on all your future endeavors, my friend.
No, I appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Friends, check out Marcus's music. I am Marcus Young on Instagram. Click the link in his bio and see all his music. Thanks for listening, friends. We'll see you next time.